Welcome to the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. I am Allison Kaczkowski, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in to check out exactly what we're talking about. Self-care means so many things to people. It's one of the reasons I decided to start this show. And you'll hear self-care discussed from a number of different angles in this space. I am grateful to have you with me, and I hope you get a lot out of what I'm going to share with you today.
Hey, everybody. It's Allison Kaczkowski. Thanks for joining me again today for another edition of the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care podcast. This is our Tuesday flagship show. I am your host. I'm always excited to be with you. And today we're going to go in a little bit different direction. I have the pleasure today of talking with Sarah Bowes, who is a nurse practitioner by training, but she's also an entrepreneur, and she's become a super big activist for a cause that she's just super passionate about. Obviously, it's affected her family. We're going to talk about this quite a bit. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about all the pieces of this journey.
Yay, love that. So, but before we get into any of that, because my audience is probably now thinking, all right, what is this? First of all, just tell my audience a little bit about you. I know that before we hit record, you had started a business to try to address a problem that you saw in your clinical training field, but you've really become passionate about something else that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, I love to tell people I'm multifaceted. I think it's the best way to describe me in my life. But before I really got into this entrepreneurial journey, for me, like the biggest journey of my life has been my mental health. And so when I became a nurse practitioner, I actually was really, really battling my mental health at the time because I became a nurse practitioner during the prime of COVID. And so I literally, oh my God, it was a nightmare
for so many people, right?
Yes. Well, there's so much uncertainty. I mean, just endless uncertainty during COVID.
Yeah.
And then to compound that with such a high stakes exam, like if you don't pass this thing, then all this money and all this time that you've spent in school really don't matter. And so yeah. I actually ended up having my exam rescheduled 5 different times. Like I'd show up to the testing center and it'd be closed and I have no idea.
So that's
my God, it was awful.
Keeping the can down the road, so to speak, right?
Yes, it was endless. But I finally took the dang thing. And when I did, I was like, wow, I really had all this anxiety. But like, if you can graduate nurse practitioner school, you can absolutely pass this test. And how do I articulate this to my friends and my classmates? Because first person in my class to test. And it just like, I was like sitting in the testing center parking lot and I was like, maybe I can make like a review course, but yeah. My style.
Yeah.
Like, what would that look like? What would that feel like? And me being me, I have an idea, I act on it. So less than a week later, I put my first course out into the world. And I love to tell people this story just to kind of like reframe and rewrite what's possible a bit, because I gave it to my first 30 classmates for free if they would invite somebody into my Facebook group. So I gave it to the first 100 people for free. And the first day I went to sell it, I sold it for $15 for lifetime access to this 3-hour course. And I made $1,000 in a day. And it was the most mind-bending, mind-breaking moment, because I often didn't make $1,000 in a week as a nurse. Yeah. I didn't know that I could do something that I enjoyed.
Were you not working part-time? Were you just working like part-time or?
Oh, no. I was working full. So at the time, because it was during COVID, I was teaching online, but I was teaching nursing students. I was teaching bachelor students while I was finishing up my nurse practitioner degree. But to get to do what I love and make real money was so cool. And I did that for a couple of years. And I really chased that business and chased that passion so hard. And
felt like you were really helping a lot of not just your
goodness.
I felt like you were helping your industry, too. You know, you wanted to be for the solution to make it easy for people in your industry to keep training, right?
Yes. The impact was huge. That was the coolest, funnest part to me by far was the impact. And like, every time someone would pass, they'd come in my Facebook group and be like, you know, my life was changed by doing this course. And like, how could you not chase that?
Totally. 100%. I agree.
But so right after
that, though, you got to a point where you didn't want to do that anymore. You felt like your time was better served doing something else.
Yes. So I got to a point where I was like, the business had grown so large, I wasn't getting to do all the things I loved anymore because I was like inundated with the real business parts like taxes in every state. And ended up selling that business when I was 8.5 months pregnant. That was in June of 2022. And just 3 weeks later in July, what I thought was a normal, healthy baby that I was carrying was not normal or healthy at all. She actually had 4 different heart defects. And so my life kind of completely upended because here I was preparing for a casual maternity leave. And now they're like, oh, no, your baby's going to have open heart surgery in her first week of life.
And you were like, what? Oh. That's probably not what was on your dance card at the time.
No, it's not on my bingo card. Any bingo card I've ever had in my life.
Right.
Literally, what do you mean? Like, I've had so many ultrasounds. She's normal. And they're like, no, she's definitely not.
Wow.
And we started down this new chaotic journey because essentially her first surgery was a patch for her to get big and strong for her second surgery. She ended up having to emergently have her second surgery early around Christmas time of that same year. And they geared us up for, you know, even after she has her big surgery, like she's going to have 4 to 5 more open heart surgeries throughout her life because we have to keep replacing this fake heart valve of hers.
Yeah.
And for
it's
me,
it's just become kind of an ongoing, you know, I don't want to minimize what you're saying, but for people listening, maybe who don't know a lot about this, I would bet that the conventional wisdom is that in the beginning, there's a, you know, a procedure, maybe 2, maybe 3. Of course, it all depends on the severity, right? And then hopefully you look at what the next steps are after that. But it sounds like it's become more ongoing with you.
Yeah, for her, it's definitely super ongoing. Like they literally consider her procedures to be palliative, which means just like get you to the next one, which was hard for me to stomach as a nurse and nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
But here's the cool part. The cool part is I started doing a lot of advocacy work for congenital heart disease because I was like, I am so uniquely leveraged to show up with the medical expertise.
That's right. You are.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And flexibility of time because I sold my business. Mm-hmm. And I have this really incredible personal story because my daughter actually almost died during her second surgery. And I started working with a couple of different nonprofits to really change the landscape of what advocacy looks like for congenital heart disease, because it's the most common birth defect, but the very least funded. And I'm like, how could this possibly be true? But it is.
So I just want to repeat that for people listening, that a congenital heart disease or a heart defect is the most common birth defect today. Boys
one
and
in
girls?
100. Yes, one in
100.
One in 100.
One in every 100 babies born is born with it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but not all of them are as severe as Meadows. So Meadows like required critical life-saving surgeries. They're not all that severe, but it's still one in 100.
Wow, it's amazing. And on top of what you just said, again, I just want to repeat for people listening, it's the most least funded. So let that sink in. It's the most common, but it's the one that has the least amount of resources around it. Tell me how that makes sense.
I have really had to wrap my head around that one. I think the biggest, well, 2 things. Number one is awareness. If we don't know something's a problem, then how in the world can we fix it? And I became a nurse practitioner and did not know that statistic. So I'll start there. But 2 is there's no big pharma approach to congenital heart disease. Like these are surgeries, procedures, interventions. It's not something you're magically going to fix with a drug. And as a result, you just don't get the same kind of funding and leverage.
Yeah. So this has really become a not just a passion project for you, but obviously part of your identity. So before we get into kind of what you're doing with it, I just want you to speak to how has this affected you, not just as a mom and a professional, but as just an individual trying to keep all the balls in the air and do the best that you can every day for yourself and your family?
I mean, getting her diagnosis, I don't want to sound dramatic, it changed our entire lives. I feel like it changed the trajectory of our entire lives. To almost lose your child is such a life-altering experience. How could anything be the same after it?
Yeah. And especially since you, up until the very end, were under the assumption that everything was okay.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that if you knew ahead of time, you could have prepared yourself. I mean, that's probably partially true, but we're still human beings. I mean, of course, it's going to be a dramatic experience.
Yes. And it was actually such a gift to know in advance, but not know too far in advance.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's...
Because there wasn't anything we could have done different. Like she was safe while she was inside of me. It's when she came out that it was a different ballgame for her.
So then Obviously, you had to just say, all right, this is a different ballgame now. We're going to be doing something different. So tell us a little bit now about how you've been able to kind of make this, you know, it's more than a passion project for you. Make this kind of, you know, your calling, really, is to help raise awareness, to not just increase the amount of education around it so more people are aware, because I think you and I both know, as you know, two professionals with extensive training, that, you know, knowledge alone really isn't enough to change people's behavior. You know, there has to be more than that. So what all have you done to try to keep this in the forefront for people?
Yeah, I always tell people I'm trying to turn my grief into purpose. You know, we still feel so much grief all the time about kind of the reality versus expectations of becoming first-time parents, me and my husband both. And I think, like, the first thing that I had to do for myself and something, like, I wanted to emphasize is taking care of my own mental health. You know, because when you go through a life-changing experience like that, like, I was, like, rocked to my core. Yeah. And so before I could ever think about being an activist and trying to change this landscape and trying to create a world where there's less children who have open heart surgeries, I really had to, like, pause and be like, okay, what's going on with me and my brain? And how am I going to best manage that day to day? Because I can't do anything with it until I do.
Yeah. That's actually a really important point that I think we could just kind of talk about a little bit more, because yeah. I think our tendency as human beings, and I know a lot of people in my audience can probably relate to this, is that, you know, when we get bad news or something happens that we're not expecting, or something throws us for a loop, or, you know, God forbid, something tragic, right? You know, I think our tendency is to just keep it together. You know, our tendency mm-hmm. is to, I got to keep it together. I got to keep going. I'm going to come up with a plan. I'm going to manage it. I'm going to deal with it, right? Because that's, you know, I think that's just how we're wired, you know, but and I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. I still think we have to be taking action. But I think, to your point, giving yourself permission to just have those moments, and however long it takes, to just, you know, allow yourself to kind of be in the hellhole that it actually is.
Oh, it was definitely a hellhole. You know, I think about all the time, the antidote to anxiety is action.
Yeah.
But when we got out of the hospital the second time, and just to give you like a brief glimpse of what we experienced, like, we literally watched our daughter's heartbeat from outside her body. Like, yeah. I couldn't go back to real life. I felt frozen. Like, there was no like next step to make that better, right?
Yeah.
And so actually,
you just had to let yourself kind of stay there for a while.
Well, I started speaking out. I was like, I don't think what I'm experiencing is just run-of-the-mill anxiety, but I already had a diagnosis of PTSD from something else. And I'm like, this doesn't even feel like PTSD. Like, what is happening in my brain? And I actually got a diagnosis of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Oh, wow.
Which was an incredible pivot in how do I manage my brain, because OCD at its core, people always think it's hand washing. I'm like, guys, it's not just hand washing. That's like a symptom of a bigger problem.
Totally. Totally. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. But what OCD is an intolerance of uncertainty. And I've never had so much uncertainty in my life. Like, we don't know when her next surgery is going to be. We don't know what her future is going to look like. There's so many things we don't know. And so your brain wants to cope with that. And when you have OCD, you start doing all these things that make you think you have certainty, and you absolutely do not. Because,
well, and really what it is it's giving you control. It's
but a false illusion.
Yeah. And compulsive behavior, whether it's exercise or restrictive eating or shopping or whatever, that's what we lean to, because that's what helps give us control.
Yes. And especially in a situation in a life where I had what felt like no control. So for me, I had to get my diagnosis. I had to start doing exposure therapy and really like learning to rework with my brain and how it was wired to be able to kind of step forward into this new beautiful path of advocacy that I've really leaned into over the last couple of years.
So I'm thrilled to announce that I'm partnering with a brand new product, and it's called Cellevate. This is an amazing, tasty, gummy supplement, and it comes in two varieties. One designed to help you with inflammation and recovery, perfect for after a workout, or if you've had like several days in a row where you've really pushed it and you're really starting to feel it in your body, this is the perfect addition to a regular routine. The other formula helps address focus and memory, which, let's be honest, I think we can all use a little help there, right? What's different about Cellevate is that not only does it taste great, but it has amazing antioxidant power. So many vitamins and supplements on the market today, you either have to take several in a single day to even see any kind of tangible result, or most of the time, a lot of them don't even give you the result that they promise. And Cellevate checks both boxes. I take one of each formula every day, and what's more is that they pack and travel really well. So you can take some and put them in a Ziploc bag and throw it in your bag when you're going out of town, and they won't melt. And it just is the perfect addition to whatever it is that you're doing every day in the way of vitamins and supplements and whatever else works for you. So I knew that I had to get in here and at least tell you about it. I would love it if you would head over to their site and give it a try. I'm actually going to offer you a really special deal. You can find this amazing product at their website, and that's spelled Cellevate.com, which is Cellevate.com. And use my special promo code, the Allison K 2024, and you can save 15% off. I would love to know what you think once you have a chance to try this. So making that transition, though, probably meant that you kind of had to go to places that maybe you really weren't prepared to, but you knew that you had to. Is that an accurate way to say it?
Oh, I think that's great way to describe exposure therapy. Nobody wants to do exposure therapy. Nobody like wants to face your biggest fears head on and realize you don't die. But doing that over and over is intentional and purposeful, because then you realize like, oh, I didn't die. And oh, like I've survived 100% of the panic attacks I've had in the past and will in the future. Like once you start building up that muscle, then you can change.
Well, and I love how you sort of described it like that, because, you know, as you know, my background is in health and fitness. So a lot of what, when I was working in fitness full time, a lot of what I would tell my clients is, you know, when you're trying to get to a place that you haven't been before, whether it's a new goal or you're trying to achieve, say, a goal weight, or you have like a specific, you know, tangible type goal, like run a race or be able to do something challenging that you haven't been capable of doing before for whatever reason. You know, you have to think of it like you're strengthening a new muscle, right? It's like at first, you're going to feel weak. You're going to feel like you don't know what you're doing, like you just can't get through it. And then the more reps that you give yourself, you know, the more opportunities, the more times that you just say, you know what, I'm just going to do this and whatever happens, happens. You're teaching yourself you can do something really hard, which I think is an incredible lesson for a lot of things in life.
Yeah, well, you're expanding your capacity. I think about that all the time, just expanding your capacity to do more, be more.
And I think a lot of our tendency, like I said before, as human beings, is to just keep going. And then I think we get to a point where we either burn out or we check out, or we just say, I'm completely shut down for whatever reason. And, you know, that's not really the goal. The goal is not to keep producing. The goal is to allow yourself to be in the experience and find out what you can about yourself.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the things that you learned to do to expand your own capacity?
I mean, I always tell people, I just dive headfirst into things. Like I'm not a dip your toe in kind of gal. And so what I found out.
I'm being honest. So
yeah, it's like, that's just how I live my life and it works for me. So when I found out I had OCD, I was like, okay, how do we tackle this? What do we do?
Yeah.
And she was like, I think, and to give you perspective too, the OCD scale is like 0 to 40. I scaled to 37 or I scored a 37. Yeah. So yeah. I was in big symptoms. It was definitely impacting my day to day. And so I decided to do an intensive outpatient program where I did 5 to 6 hours of therapy every day for about a month. I have four different therapists at the time. But for me, like I knew it was what, like I knew I had to like get over this like metaphorical hump to show up as the wife that I needed to be to my husband, who's also going through a lot of mental health stuff because we just got out of the hospital, to show up as a present mom to my daughter. And also I was still working within my previous business, even though I had sold it. And so to be able to show up in life and work in all the ways I needed to, like, I just like couldn't keep operating that way day to day. And then, you know, continuing to use those tools, continuing to do exposures, but on a much smaller but still meaningful scale as I move forward. I mean, it's been 2.5 years since I've been diagnosed with OCD now. I still do every other week OCD therapy just as check-ins. Like, even if I feel like I don't need it, like, I'm still always checking in.
Well, but it's not something really that you get over, you know?
No. I tell people I'm recovering, not recovered.
Yeah, it's a little bit like AA or, you know, Gamblers or whatever. It's like, you have to be in some type of supportive community or have some kind of accountability to keep showing up for yourself, because the work just keeps going on. We don't get to a point where like, I'm done with that, I'm going to move on to the next thing. It's not like that.
No, I wish. I'd love to be done with you, OCD, but yeah. Here I am.
Well, so in learning all of this about yourself and kind of, you know, allowing yourself to freak out when you needed to and find within yourself the resources that you needed to, you sort of figured out about yourself that now you've become this activist for this cause that you believe very deeply in. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, as we talked about earlier, you know, most common birth defect, but the least funded. I was like, how do I make a difference? Because I've got the flexibility of time to do this. I've got the story to do this. How do I do this? And, you know, it started really simple. Like, I just started joining some heart walks with some different organizations. And that was fun. But I was like, gosh, I really want to do more.
Yeah.
And
I just connect you to a lot of people, which is helpful, but it's really kind of on the surface. So
yeah, I was like, I want it to be deeper than this. I don't want it to be superficial. Like, I want to make real change and impact like I did in my business. And I had the opportunity, and I feel like kind of a turning point for me was going to Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. There is a piece of legislation called the Congenital Hearts Future Act, and it does two really cool things. One, obviously, research and funding and all that good stuff. But two is it increases the workforce of adult cardiologists who specialize in these congenital hearts. Because if you have had all these surgeries as a congenital heart patient, you don't want to go to just a regular cardiologist as an adult. And, you know, it was just in 2009 that it was the first time ever there were more adults living with congenital heart disease than children. Because it was the first time ever that, like, medicine was catching up to these people. This is still a relatively new area that we're tackling, which is why, you know, I talked about awareness too. But I got to go to Washington, D.C. with this group, and I got to talk to Congress people, and I got to advocate for our bill. And it literally got pushed through in the final moments that year.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, it was so cool. It was so cool. And I was just lit up. I was like, okay, like, this is what I want to be a part of. So I've been to D.C. actually 3 times now. You know, this year is an interesting year all the way around trying to get funding and different things. I was just in D.C. a couple of months ago. But being able to, like, really, like, make sure, like, that bill got through and see, like, a nationwide impact is incredible. And, you know, we were talking about before the podcast episode started too, like, I am already seeing the advancements and changes in medicine in my daughter's life. Like, two big examples. One, she has a pacemaker that literally takes up half of her stomach. And in that, a lot of ways, that's limiting because we can't have magnets near it, which means you can't have an iPhone near it. She can't go through a metal detector, all this stuff.
Wow. Yeah, all the stuff you really have to think about.
So much you have to think about. Magnetiles, like all the magnet toys, all the things. But the last time we saw her pacemaker doc, he was telling us that they don't even place those anymore. They're obsolete. Like, they literally have one less than the size of a quarter that they put in. So all the magnet stuff is way dampened down. I was like, oh, that's cool. But even bigger and even cooler than that was, you know, her lingering piece is she has this fake heart valve. So every time she grows bigger, she outgrows that heart valve. It has to be replaced via open heart surgery. In the last few years, there have been so many advancements in replacing that heart valve without having to do open heart surgery.
Yeah.
And so what was once told us as a lifetime of surgeries is we hope maybe one more, two more max surgeries, and then they can start doing this alternative procedure. So it's so cool to be able to see the impact of a change in real time and know that the work that you're doing is making a big difference.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. So, you know, this is obviously going to be an ongoing process for you for quite some time. So
this is my life.
What do you really want to tell people listening about it?
Well, I tell people all the time, because when I go on podcasts, I talk on Instagram, et cetera, people assume I want money. And yes, money is meaningful because funding is what creates research. However, what I really want people to hear and know is a statistic that we've said multiple times now, because if we're not aware it's a problem, we can't go forward with the next steps to make a real change. And so if everyone listening could even just share with one person, like, hey, I heard this podcast today. Did you know the heart defects are the most common birth defect, but the least funded? That in itself is huge. Like, that also creates real change and impact.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that. So how can people reach out to you if they're feeling moved or inclined? I mean, are you doing anything right now that you want to invite people to?
Oh, I am everywhere. So I think the easiest place to connect with me, and I actually reply to my own messages, is at Sarah Michelle MP on Instagram. Super easy to get a hold of me there. Also have a website, which is sarahmichellebose.com. I have a whole Heart Mom page there. And I am constantly talking about different events I'm doing. Like, I'm doing a heart walk in a couple of weeks. I'm involved with an organization called Tiny Superheroes that does like capes for children in the hospital. So I do different events with them throughout the country. And so if you follow along with me, you can see kind of what I'm up to and what's next, because I'm always doing something.
Oh, wow. Super impressive. And I just give you all the kudos in the world for realizing that this is where you want to spend your time and that this is really what you feel like your calling is. So best of luck to you. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you so much. You know, there's nothing more important to me than being the best mom the meadow I can possibly be. And this lets me do that.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. So for all of you listening who have heard this and, you know, want to connect with Sarah, you can find her links in the show notes. Her website, I believe she said Instagram is the easiest way. Sarah Michelle NP, right? Is that your handle on Instagram?
Yep.
Okay. So you can connect with her there. And if, you know, what she talked about really resonated with you, if you have someone in your family who is suffering from a congenital heart defect, or you know somebody, please, if you would, copy the link to this episode and share it with them as a gift from me. You're welcome to connect with me on my website at www.theallisonk.com. That's Allison with one L. Just hit the connect button in the upper right-hand corner and write to us, and we'll be glad to do it for you if you just tell us where you would like it to go. This is really how we've been able to build such an amazing audience across the globe, and why I get so many messages from so many of you every week saying that what we're talking about at the time is really helping you. And that's really the main reason why I started podcasting 6 years ago, which is really hard to believe. So, but I am grateful for each and every one of you. You guys are all, we all consider you part of the family, whether you're listening to me today for the first time or you've been following me for quite some time. We do consider you part of our tribe. So we thank you for that. And we are grateful for each and every one of you. This is Allison Kaczkowski with The Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. You're one step closer to living your ultimate life. So make it a good one.